This podcast is brought to you by Money Control. Hello and welcome to Money Control. You're listening to In the News with me, Anvita Bansal. After a great weekend, today is Monday, January 20, 2020, and I'll be bringing you all the latest updates from India and around the world. But before that, a small note on our Money Control app. The Money Control app has added some interesting features. Download it now to check them out. Ahead of Budget 2020, you can also tune in to our Budget 2020 podcast series, where experts from Money Control analyze and discuss your expectations from the Finance Ministry. And now, back to our top stories for the day. First up, Jagat Prakash Nadda becomes BJP's new national president. Supreme Court dismisses Nirbhaya convict's claim that he was a minor at the time of the crime. And we'll also discuss how India's richest 1% hold more wealth than the bottom 70% of the country's population. The Andhra Pradesh cabinet has approved a report that recommended the decentralization of the state capital. Right, moving on to our next story, Jagat Prakash Nadda becomes BJP's new national president. Atharva, can you please give us information on who this person JP Nadda is?
So, in a change of guard in the BJP, the Bharatiya Janata Party, Amit Shah gave the baton of the BJP chief, the BJP national president, to Jagat Prakash Nadda. Nadda was already had already become the working president in June after the BJP-led National Democratic Alliance came to power. And Amit Shah, who was until then the BJP president, was made the Union Home Minister. So BJP has this policy that an individual could hold only one post. So because, you know, Amit Shah was already the Home Minister and he was already in the government, the party had already decided that the BJP would get a new president by December. So this is what has happened. This is a change of guard for the, as the BJP leaders have mentioned over the course of time, this is for the largest party in the world. So Jagat Prakash Nadda, of course, has a prominent responsibility and has huge shoes to fill, because Amit Shah, as we all know, led the party from the front and he took the party where it is now. I mean, BJP won the 2014 elections and that was, of course, under the leadership of Rajnath Singh. But from 2014 to 2020, we have only seen the party rise. There have been states where it hasn't won, but there were some very, very prominent victories, vital victories, such as in politically important state like Uttar Pradesh. So Nadda, who is the new president, national president now, there are a lot of expectations from him and he has huge shoes to fill. Now, Nadda is someone who comes from Himachal Pradesh. And he's reportedly very trusted by the party's top brass, as well as the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangha, which is the BJP's ideological parent. But he was, like Prime Minister Narendra Modi mentioned in his speech today, Nadda is also as much a product of Bihar as he's a product of Himachal Pradesh, because his political journey or his involvement in politics started from his Patna University days. He completed his BA from Patna University and then he went on to study law at Himachal Pradesh University in Shimla. Then he served as the National General Secretary of the Akhil Bharatiya Vidyarthi Parishad, which is the ABVP, for 3 years, from 1986 to 1989. And then he was appointed the Chief of BJP's Youth Wing, which is the Bharatiya Janata Yuva Morcha, in 1991. He has had a long political career, like most of these senior BJP leaders have. And in 2007, he was inducted in the Kumar Dhumal State Cabinet and was given the Environment, Science and Technology portfolios from 2008 to 2012. And he was then in 2012 elected to the Rajya Sabha, and he also served as the Union Minister in the first Narendra Modi Cabinet as the Minister of Health and Family Welfare. He has had a long political career, of course, and he's known in political circles as the backdoor strategist who is trusted by both Modi and Shah. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of his appointment as the BJP national president was expected. He was already the working president, but the formalities were completed today.
Thank you, Atharva, for all those details.
Thank you.
Supreme Court dismisses Nirbhaya convict's claim that he was a minor at the time of the crime. To give us more details on this, I have with me Money Control's Shraddha Sharma. Hi Shraddha, thank you for joining in.
Hi Anvita.
Shraddha, can you please give us more details on this?
So the Supreme Court has basically rejected the claim of one of the four convicts in the Nirbhaya case because he has again put out a plea saying that he was underage at the time of the incident. And now we, as we discussed on Friday, we have the second date that has been announced for the hanging. That will be February 1 at 6 a.m. And the court has said that an age claim rejected earlier cannot be raised again. And it was also earlier rejected by the Delhi High Court. The name of the convict is Pawan Kumar Gupta. And he had again put out a plea saying that he was a juvenile. The Supreme Court has said, and I quote, "We don't find any ground to entertain this petition. Once the issue of juvenile is examined and rejected by courts, it can't be raised again." Unquote. So basically everybody had said, including Nirbhaya's mother Asha Devi, that this is just a delaying tactic by the convicts of putting a plea again and again and applying for mercy review separately, because the hanging date is final. And previously, the date was 22nd January and it was put off after a convict filed for a mercy plea. So, this has been happening, and the advocate AP Singh, that is appearing from for the convict, that is Pawan Gupta, had argued that his school certificate showed that he was a minor at the time of the crime, and the court had never considered his school certificate in that case. To which Solicitor General Tushar Mehta, who appeared for the Delhi police, had said that these claims were considered in the earlier stages and in the judicial forum, and it was travesty of justice if the convict was allowed to raise the claim of being a juvenile repeatedly. So this is what has happened. And Mr. Mehta has said that the convict was 19 at the time, and a certified copy of his birth certificate and school certificate was taken on record by every judicial forum. So this is where the case was stuck, but it, since it has been rejected, so we know they will be hanged on February 1 as the date was decided on Friday.
Thank you so much, Shraddha, for giving us all those insights.
Thank you, Anvita, for having me.
India's richest 1% hold more wealth than the bottom 70% of the country's population. To give us more details on this, I have with me Money Control's Siddesh Raut. Siddesh, could you give us a clarification on the extent of the inequality?
Well, Anvita, India's 1%, the top richest 1% of the people, hold more than four times the amount of money that 953 million people that make up the bottom 70% of India's population. And these statistics have been compiled by the Oxfam. And they also said that the combined wealth of all 63 Indian billionaires is higher than the total union budget of India for the fiscal year FY19, which stands at around 24,42,200 crore rupees.
What does the scenario look like for the rest of the world?
Well, coming to the rest of the world, the report pointed out that global inequality has been entrenched on a level that has been expanding with every coming year. In the study, which is labeled Time to Care, and which was published here ahead of the 50th meeting of the World Economics Forum, the rights group also said that the world's 2,153 billionaires have more wealth than the 4.6 billion people who make up 60% of the planet's population. The report also quotes Amitabh Behar, who is Oxfam India CEO, and I quote, "Our broken economies are lining the pockets of billionaires and big businesses at the expense of ordinary men and women. No wonder people are starting to question whether billionaires should even exist," end quote. He also goes on to say, and I quote, "The gap between rich and poor can't be resolved without deliberate inequality-busting policies, and too few governments are committed to these," end quote.
Right. Siddesh, what does it have to say about the domestic inequality?
Well, Anvita, that's a very good question you've raised, because the report also speaks at length about several domestic inequalities that have been highlighted in the report. It's said that, and I quote, sexist economies are fueling this inequality crisis, and they're enabling a wealthy elite to accumulate large amounts of wealth, leaving a lot of ordinary women and girls to be particularly not so well off. The report said that if you take a look at a female domestic worker and how much she earns, it would take about a whopping 22,277 years to earn what a top CEO makes in a technology company in a single year. Another interesting statistic, but also very disheartening, is that earnings are pegged at 106 rupees per second for a tech CEO, and he would make more than in 10 minutes than what a domestic worker would make in 1 year. The report also went on to say that women and girls put in 3.26 billion hours of unpaid care work in each and every day. And this kind of contribution to the economy, Indian economy, would bring out at least 19 lakh crore a year, which is 20 times the entire education budget of India in 2019. And it stood at 93,000 crore in 2019.
One last question, Sidesh. What were the suggestions made to reduce this gap?
Well, there were certain suggestions that were provided to try to reduce this inequality gap. And I'm quoting Amitabh Behar, who was the CEO of Oxfam India again. And he said that this gap between the rich and poor cannot be resolved without deliberate policy interventions. And he also noted that too few governments are committed to this. He said that governments are massively undertaxing the wealthiest institutions, individuals and corporations, and they're failing to collect the revenues that could help bring about a certain amount of changes that is the responsibility to tackle poverty and inequality. A lot of governments are also underfunding vital public services and infrastructure that could bring about a lightening of the workload of women and girls in the country. He went on to say that just getting the richest 1% to pay 0.5% extra tax on their wealth over the next 10 years would create the investment needed to create 117 million jobs in sectors such as elderly and childcare, education and health. Also, they suggested that public investments in the care economy of 2% of GDP, it would have a massive potential to create about 11 million new jobs and make up for the 11 million jobs that were lost in 2018.
Thank you so much, Sidesh, for all those details.
Thank you for inviting me, Anvita.
The Andhra Pradesh Cabinet has approved a report that recommended the decentralization of the state capital. To give us more insights on this, I have with me Money Control's Atharva Pandit. Hi, Atharva. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Atharva, please, can you share some insights on this?
Yeah, so the decentralized, like you mentioned, the decentralization of administration for a balanced development of all regions of Andhra Pradesh. That is the whole intention of the report. And the according to reports, the aim of such a development or such a move is the formation of three capitals with an executive capital at Visakhapatnam. Now, there have been several, the report suggests that there have been several parties and several civil society groups which have been opposing the move due to various reasons. Now, for instance, there is one group called Amravati Joint Action Committee, which is backed by the Telugu Desam Party, which was in power in Andhra Pradesh until recently. So they had, in fact, the entire Amravati region had been under siege by the police, because the Amravati Joint Action Committee had given a call for Chalo Assembly rally today to protest against the capital shift plan. This was an unprecedented clampdown, as we can expect. And it was imposed in, according to reports, it was imposed in 29 villages of Amravati. And a report suggests that the police did not allow the farmers to come out on the streets to register their protests. And massive security arrangements have been deployed, according to Hindustan Times. The police also served notices to TDP leaders and farmers not to stage any protest on the road leading to the assembly. And prohibitory orders had also been placed under Section 144 of the CRPC and the Section 30 of the Police Act. According to the police, around 800 leaders, including those of the TDP, the Communist Party of India, and the Amravati JC, were taken into preventive custody. So this is what is there were also reports coming in that a prominent TDP MP Jaydev Galla was also reportedly detained by the police.
Well, with that, it's a wrap on this edition of In the News. In case if you have any queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us on mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until then, this is your host Anvita signing off. For more news, views and updates, please stay logged on to moneycontrol.com. Thank you for listening.